In David's army, there were sons of Issachar who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. What time is it today, and what should we as God's people be doing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is great to be with you today on The Line of Fire. I had a delightful morning from about 10:30 to 12:30 today. I was at a Christian high school about an hour from our offices here, speaking to about 100 students, so from ninth graders up through seniors, 12th graders, talking about the issue of homosexuality. Yeah. One of the teachers in a current events class said that his class of about 20 has been going through my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and they realized this was a key issue they needed to address and talk about. So I was brought in to speak to the whole student body. I said, gladly come in and do it, speak to them, and I'll tell you more about that later. I want to talk about getting the hearts of the younger generation. Why so many have dropped out of church, why so many feel that, quote, Christianity is irrelevant, why so many feel that the Bible is not important. What can we do to recapture the hearts of young people? We'll talk about that today, but a bunch of other issues we need to discuss. So thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire. Here is the number where you can weigh in. And before I give you that number, if you are a young person, if you are a teenager, or college age, or just even in your 20s, all right? If you are in that age group, I would love to hear from you today as well. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call, 866-348-7884. Or you can post your thoughts on my Facebook page, ASKDR Brown, Ask Dr. Brown. There are some major developments that are going on, though, that I do want to talk to you about first that are very, very important. Many of you are listening to me in New Jersey right now as I speak, and there have been attempts in New Jersey to push for a ban on any professional counseling or therapy to help minors with unwanted same-sex attraction. We have said for years that those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet, that tolerance and acceptance is not what people are after, but rather affirmation of their viewpoint or their sexual expression or sexuality, even celebration of it. And anything less than that will be deemed bigoted, intolerant, and hateful. Well, there is a lawsuit now in New Jersey that has been launched against our friends at Jonah, which is Jews offering new alternatives to healing. Arthur Goldberg is the co-director. And the plaintiffs claim that they used the services of Jonah when they were in their teens or young 20s, that they went for counseling to help with unwanted same-sex attraction, and that they were hurt by what happened. It alleges specific practices that went on. I can't comment on those. Number one, I have no idea whether they're accurate or not. Number two, I'm neither a lawyer nor a therapist, so I'm talking more from the larger social perspective. And then in particular, from my perspective as a follower of Jesus, our friends at Jonah are Jewish and are not Jesus believers, but we are standing together in these key moral, cultural issues. And the attempt, there's also legal help coming from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which columnist Mike Adams, criminology professor Mike Adams, suggests would better be called the Intellectual Poverty Law Center. They are working together to try to get so-called conversion therapy banned. And a congresswoman is now putting forth a bill to try to get it banned nationally. In other words, no help with unwanted same-sex attraction. That will become illegal. Uh-huh.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we will be talking about attitudes among younger people in America today, attitudes towards pressing moral issues, cultural issues, attitudes towards homosexuality, attitudes towards abortion. Where the church has failed to impact the younger generation is it a matter of we fail to preach the real gospel, we fail to bring it the power of the Spirit? Is it that we're insensitive and irrelevant? We'll talk about those things. I just brought up a bill that is being sponsored that will try to ban so-called conversion therapy or sexual orientation change efforts on a professional level. That is being introduced by Congresswoman Jackie Speier to protect minors from, quote, gay conversion quackery. Now, a lawsuit against Jonah, Jews offering new alternatives to healing, helping people with unwanted same-sex attractions, especially Jewish people. A lawsuit against them claiming that they're bringing harm. I'm going to return to that in a moment. But young people, on a fairly strong basis, a fairly strong majority of young people, say 18 to 29, are pro-homosexual in their thinking. They want to see marriage redefined. They don't really see any issue with someone being gay or lesbian. Hey, it's great, fine. No real difference from homosexuality. There's been a shift in opinion there, but young people, when it comes to the issue of abortion, have been shifting in the other direction. I want to address this issue of abortion, of pro-life. In fact, we're gonna focus on this for a minute. We'll come back to some of the bills I mentioned, and we'll pursue this larger issue of where young people are at today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you're a young person listening, if you're a follower of Jesus, if you don't believe in Jesus at all, if you used to believe in Jesus, I'd love to hear from you, and I will try to get to your calls first. But we have with us from Ohio, Lori Viers, Vice President of Warren County Right to Life. And she has been actively involved with the heartbeat bill that is in front of Ohio Senate right now. And she has been in the pro-life movement for years. I want to talk about the specific bill, but then about attitudes, shifting attitudes on the issue of abortion. So, Lori, thanks so much for joining us on the air today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
First, I know that many of our listeners don't know what the heartbeat bill is. So let's talk about that specifically. What's taking place in Ohio right now?
Well, the heartbeat bill is a very simple bill that would protect an unborn baby from the time its heartbeat is detectable. And this bill passed the Ohio House in June of 2011. And it went to the Senate then, you know, probably the beginning of July of 2011. And it's basically been kind of languishing in the Ohio Senate, which is controlled by Republicans. Both our Ohio House and Ohio Senate are controlled by Republicans, so you would think that this would sail right through.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're not finding that's the case.
Interesting. And there are those that are called rhinos, Republicans in name only, but I see from your own description you are a Christian first, conservative second. Are there people that are involved politically and claim to stand for conservative values that really don't have these as core values in their own lives?
Absolutely. We have a majority of the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, pretty much all ran as pro-life conservatives. You know, they want our endorsement at election time, they want our vote, they want us to man the phone banks. But then when it's time to pass a pro-life bill that's got some teeth to it, they run. And, you know, they don't have the courage of the convictions. You know, they're pro-life when it's convenient for them, but unfortunately they are running away from this bill, kind of cowering and kowtowing to a Senate president who also is a Republican, but he is more moderate, and he is saying, you know, he doesn't want the bill to get a floor vote. All we're asking for is an up or down floor vote. We're not asking for a guarantee of passage. So it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And I, as a white evangelical myself, I have taken fellow white evangelicals to task for saying we get all involved in the political process and we're going to vote Republican and throw ourselves in with the party. And then we get disappointed. Oh, you wanted our votes, but you didn't stand for our issues. And then 4 years later, we go through the same cycle. And I've chided my black evangelical friends for just throwing themselves in with the Democratic Party. So, you know, we can each do this. First, what can folks do within Ohio to make a difference? And then I want to just address a larger issue about the pro-life movement. But within Ohio, what can be done?
Well, now that the Senate president has said, nope, I'm not going to give you a vote before the end of the year, and the bill will die on December 31st, we are asking every Ohioan who's pro-life to call, and they can go to ohiosenate.gov to get the names and phone numbers, but to call each senator, especially the Republicans, and say, you know, look, we want this bill to get a vote. Use your power to force a vote. There are at least three ways that I know that they can basically force a vote over the objections of the Senate President, Tom Niehaus. They don't have to take, you know, his word as the final. In fact, he's on his way out the door. He's term limited out on December 31st. So for these last, four and a half weeks, he's trying to, you know, say, nope, you're not going to get a vote on these, not only this pro-life bill, but there's another pro-life bill that he's basically put the moratorium on. And we're asking people to call every Ohio senator, particularly the Republicans, who can make the difference here, and encourage them to have the will to go against their own Senate president and bring this bill to a floor vote.
All right. So that leads to a major question. We saw the Democratic platform, the national platform in the last election, was radically pro-abortion, more so than any platform before it. The convention was radically pro-abortion. And many female voters claimed that this was a major issue for them in terms of their voting. Well, I understand there's some people that feel passionately about this, but my understanding was that there had been a shift taking place in culture, and that, say, more and more young people were recognizing the rightness of the pro-life movement, and with 4D ultrasounds and other things available, it was becoming harder and harder to fight for the pro-abortion position. What's your own observation, having been involved with this for so many years?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I think people who are calling for the Republican Party to moderate its views on the pro-life issue, well, they're just wrong. A majority of Americans now are pro-life. And the younger the people, the more pro-life they are. And you know, the other thing is, you know, we hear a lot of talk right now about Hispanic vote. Hispanics are very much with us on the pro-life issue. African Americans are very much with us on the pro-life issue. So we do not need to be talking about moderating the Republican Party's views. And I'm a Republican. I'm actually I'm vice chair of my local county party. But I do not take it sitting down when we have Republicans who are not acting like Republicans. I'm a member of this party for a reason, because of the platform. The platform's great. Our problem comes in when we have people who won't stand for it, who are afraid to stand for it. And unfortunately, we seem to have a lot of those types of Republicans in the Ohio Senate.
Yeah, and I think it's not limited to the Ohio Senate. So, Lori, what do you think is the key or some of the keys that have contributed to the shift in public opinion about abortion, shifting more and more to pro-life, especially among young people? Why is that happening?
I think there are a number of reasons, but you mentioned ultrasound. Young people have grown up seeing their you know, ultrasounds of themselves before they were born and ultrasounds of their younger brothers and sisters, and I think that's a big part of it. I think, you know, the more that people know, I encourage people who are pro-choice, keep looking into this issue. The more you learn about unborn life, the more pro-life you're going to become. Mm-hmm. You know, shows on TV that look at life in the womb, I think, have been helpful. I think the controversy surrounding partial birth abortion also helped us. When a lot of folks who maybe were somewhat pro-choice realized what this means, you know, what's going on, that we're aborting babies clear up until the moment of birth, it turned a lot of people toward, you know, a more compassionate side, toward the pro-life side.
Right, and how long have you been involved on the front lines of this movement, Lori?
20 to 25 years.
Right, so you've seen a shift then, haven't you, in cultural thinking?
I have, and it's great. I think that, you know, we are winning this battle slowly. I think the polls are showing, 52% of Americans now are self-identifying as pro-life. It's just over the 50% mark, but finally, for the first time, we are in the majority, and there is no reason to water down our party platform. Why would you water down your platform toward a minority position? It doesn't make any
right.
sense.
A minority position and a destructive one at that. And
absolutely,
it's good for us to know on the issues where we stand. It often does take time, and things often hit bottom before they come back up. But we have to stand for what's right because it's right, and ultimately truth will prevail. Hey, Lori, is there a website that folks can go to if they want to find out more about what you're doing?
The best website is to look up the senators on ohiosenate.gov. But the Heartbeat Bill website is heartbeatbill.com. We need to get that updated, I'll be honest with you. But they can at least find out a little about the bill that way. But call
Sounds
the
good.
Ohio senators, please.
All right. Well, Lori, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
All right. Friends, we come back. We're going to talk about this issue of cultural shifts, cultural changes. I want to throw out some provocative thoughts. Yeah, like always. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much, friends, for being part of the broadcast here on The Line of Fire. Friends, I am deeply burdened. When we talk about moral culture revolution, we talk about being a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. I've said it before. I want to say it again. These are not empty words. This is not just something I do because I've got nothing else to do from 2 to 4 every day and then the preparation time that goes into it and the time after the show. No, this is something I do because I'm passionate about serving the body, serving you, serving this generation as a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. Major things taking place in the Middle East, a potential vote with the United Nations General Assembly regarding a state recognition of Palestine. We'll talk about that tomorrow on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. In fact, I should be having an important debate with a brother about the meaning of Israel in the Bible tomorrow. That's Thursday. Today, we're focusing on the world, on moral and cultural issues. And so many young people are turned off by our moral stance today. Thankfully, there is a shift in terms of more and more pro-life young people. That's positive. A few years back, 20 years back, it looked much more bleak. It looked much more dark. Little by little, hearts are changing. Yes, there's a horrific loss of life in the womb on a daily basis across our country, but little by little, hearts are turning. But so many young people today have fully embraced the mindset of gay activism, the goals of gay activism, so influenced by the media, so influenced by peers, so uninfluenced by the church, or influenced in a negative way. The question is, why? And the question is, how do we recapture or capture the hearts of the younger generation? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Is the primary problem that the church has just gotten stuck in old-fashioned ways and that we have become irrelevant, that we're not understanding where young people are at, we're not understanding their mindset, we're just preaching the old ways and the old ideas, and because of that, we're not having a positive impact, we're just looked at as bigoted or old-fashioned or homophobic, as the case would be? Or is it quite the opposite, that by trying to be relevant, we've departed from the gospel, that by trying to be culturally relevant and make our youth groups so relevant and even naming our church as Relevant Church, and by the way, if you go to a church called Relevant, I'm not saying that's wrong, but is it that we have so much tried to conform to the world and cater to the world that we're not able to change the world? Did Jesus change the world by being relevant? Did Jesus change the world by understanding the mindset of his day and catering to it? Or was he a radical cross-cultural leader? Well, when I think of the hippie movement, of which I was part in my teen years before I got saved at the age of 16, when I think of that, friends, I think of people that broke all the rules, that went in the opposite direction. Of course, catered to the flesh. I understand that. But went in the opposite direction from the status quo and rebelled against it and kind of stuck its noses up against the society and flaunted the generation gap, and basically culture turned towards the radical element, and those radical elements became our educators and our professors and our leaders in politics today. They didn't change the culture by becoming like it. 866-34-TRUTH. Here are some interesting observations from polls that have been done. A Barna poll, 6 reasons young Christians leave church. So these are people that are in church. I can't say what kind of church. In other words, is it really preaching the gospel? Is God really moving there? Are lives really being touched? But 6 reasons young Christians leave church, according to this Barna survey. Number 1, churches seem overprotective. Number 2, teens and 20-somethings' experience of Christianity is shallow. Number 3, churches come across as antagonistic to science. Number 4, young Christians' church experiences related to sexuality are often simplistic and judgmental. Number 5, they wrestle with the exclusive nature of Christianity. Number 6, the church feels unfriendly to those who doubt. Now, on the one hand, there are definitely some problems there that are being exposed as far as the way that believers can posture themselves, the way that we can have an environment where if you are struggling, if you are hurting, if you're struggling with your sexual identity, if you're struggling with questions about the Bible, if it just seems that the God of the Bible is mean and everybody should be able to marry the person they love and those kinds of things, that many churches do not create the feeling that your questions are quite welcome and that those are good questions and that we want to help you work through those. And we can often seem simplistic and shallow. On the flip side, I feel that if God was really moving in our midst, and I'm an eyewitness to this, I work with young people day and night, if God was really moving powerfully in our midst and people were really encountering the Lord, that change would give a change in their whole mindset and attitude and outlook on life, on service, on values, and they would go out with a burden to change their own lost generation. All right, a whole lot more to talk about, to work through here. I want to take your calls on the other side of the break. First, let me thank those of you who called in yesterday to stand with me and to help us as we prepare to go to India. I'll be traveling with 2 of my ministry team members next week, God willing, and then broadcasting live from India as we work with church planters. Planted thus far about 1,500 churches in dangerous tribal regions. We'll be working with them and laying hands on sending out new graduates to ministry. Going to India to be my 20th trip. And then in January, going to Hong Kong to minister to Chinese pastors from the mainland, teaching about 40 Christian pastors and leaders, the book of Jeremiah. So really give them a heart for prophetic ministry. These are expensive trips. These are trips that we have to underwrite entirely or in part. And I'm asking you to help us and stand with us and hold our hands up, because in doing these things, we cannot be preaching in America where we can raise money. So would you stand with me for your gift of $50 to help send me to India next week and then China in January? I want to send you 4 of the very best debates I've ever done, completely different subjects. You'll be wonderfully ministered to and blessed. About 8 hours of debate, $75 retail value. We'll send those out to you for your gift of $50. For your gift of $100, we'll add in my commentary on Jeremiah, as well as lectures on DVD on Jeremiah that are not available to the public. Call right now to stand with us, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. I really appreciate if you can stand with us. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Together, we are making a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire, 866-348-7884. Most of the young people that I am around are really very committed to Jesus. Most of the young people I'm around are very serious about serving the Lord. They are burning bright for the Lord. They are seriously committed to the Scriptures and on and on. In other words, they are not some kind of wimps where they are just completely bowing down to the prevailing culture and bowing down to what the media says. They are counterculture people with a real heart for God. I'm thrilled to see it. And yet I know that generally speaking in American culture, young people are dropping out of church. I know that many are being influenced by what the media says. And, hey, I got a gay friend, and he's a nice kid. Wouldn't doubt that there are hundreds of thousands or millions of gay kids that are nice kids. I wouldn't doubt that. But, hey, if they're nice, then it must be fine. How can you say there's anything wrong with what they're doing? More influenced by that than the Scriptures. 866-34-TRUTH. How do we impact them and win them? Just looking at, here, another survey here. Overall, 26% of people who had been to church before said that their life had been changed or affected greatly by attending church. 46% said their life had not changed by going to church. Again, the Barna survey, which tells me that there's something lacking in the substance of what these people are experiencing. It's not to say that older Christians should not sit down with younger Christians. We should. And we should say, tell me your mindset, how you think, because justice is an important value and fairness is an important value to young people. But when it's divorced from moral absolutes or when it's divorced from biblical truth, then it becomes a false justice, a false fairness that ends up turning against moral foundations rather than for. 866-348-7884. Moses, or we lost Moses in Newark. Let's go to Catherine in Walpole, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling the line of fire.
Yes, hello, Dr. Brown. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I wanted to make a statement. I think what I'm seeing, because I have five children, and my first four had gone off to public school because our Catholic schools were a distance away, and I thought that I would just put the money into their a Catholic high school education and on to college. But what I've done with my last child is I have put him in a Catholic school in kindergarten. And, I'm just seeing the difference now, from the four that have been in the public school versus this child that now is in the Catholic school. His education is so enriched on a daily basis, about infused with information about God and serving others. And, my children who went to the public school, of course, don't get that. Their faith is never talked about, of course, but I'm also feeling that they've had a sense of entitlement. Everything is about them.
Yes.
Versus my child who goes to the Catholic school, it's all about sharing and praying for people, thinking about others versus themselves. So I wanted to call mainly because, you know, if parents who are very faithful and love their children can put them in a Catholic school, I think that would be, you know, a wonderful gift to them right from the beginning, growing in their faith. And then maybe they wouldn't deviate from the faith so much. Or if they did, then they could come back to it because it's really embedded in them. Children that go to the public school, it's relying upon their parents and church, their Sunday mass.
Just to jump in, Catherine, obviously not everyone can send their kid to a Christian school, but if they are in the public school environment, we need to recognize what they're being bombarded with and then pour in biblical thinking into them. Thanks for the call, Catherine.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, we've got to realistically look at what is happening around us and not just say, well, we're right and they're wrong. We have the right answers, and if young people don't agree with us, they're wrong. And young people are always wrong, and we're always right because we're older. We might not be so brazen about it, but we could still feel like that. After all, we're the adults. After all, we're the leaders. After all, we have the experience. After all, we were once foolish young people. But not everything that a young person is thinking and talking about is foolish. And when I meet with students at our ministry school, and they'll be at least 18, they have to be at least 18 to get in. They can be 50 or 60 or 70 too, but let's say the bulk are in their 20s. And I'll sit down and talk with them and ask them about their experience in the school and what's been most positive and most helpful. Well, I get home, Nancy says, well, you should have asked them, are they disappointed in things? You should have asked them, were they expecting something and it didn't line up with their expectation? In other words, let's not just hear the good, but let's hear if we're not doing things well. Well, as leaders in the body or as parents, we need to be sensitive to these things. Even if the young people are wrong, we need to minister to them more effectively to win their hearts and their minds. 866-348-7884. James in Denver, Colorado, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. Over 50 years ago, can you hear me all right now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Over 50 years ago.
Wait, hang on. Are you James from Denver, Colorado?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
You've not called as someone else from somewhere else in the last few days or week?
No.
Oh, all right. You sound awfully like someone that has. My sincere apologies, sir. Go ahead.
About 50 years ago, the best advice I ever got was from Christian Missionary Alliance. You ever heard of them?
Sure.
One of the leaders took me aside and said, if you explain to a young person from the Bible, they now have both a natural body and a spiritual body in the fact of a soul. They have two bodies right now based upon 1 Corinthians 15.
No, that's not. Yeah, actually, yeah, James, that's not what 1 Corinthians 15 says. It's not what it says. We have a natural body now. When we're resurrected, we'll have a spiritual body. We do have a soul. We have a spirit. But we have a natural body now. We will be resurrected in a spiritual body. That's what that's about. But I'm quite sure we have spoken about some of these issues recently. All right. God bless. I appreciate that. 866-348-7884. Bill in Rotunda, West Florida, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
God bless you, Dr. Brown, and thanks for having me on today. My contention is this. The gospel is very clear. The power of God rests in Jesus Christ and Him crucified. He is the object of our faith as He is crucified. And as we understand that message and believe the gospel, God empowers us. And so I have a concern with, perversions of the gospel. One that adds law, the other one that is like Gnostics that is immoral. But Paul devoted an entire epistle, Galatians, as you well know. I think Romans and Galatians should be two epistles that the church should understand. Most Christians sitting in the pews don't even read that, don't even understand the truth behind it. The power is in Jesus Christ and Him crucified alone. And we are empowered by grace through faith alone. When we add law or works to this, it is a bondage. That's number one. And number two, Western civilization has been, the Christianity in it has been, as you well know, been attacked and undermined intellectually and culturally for centuries. And I'm a high school football coach. And FCA is very, very powerful, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Mm-hmm. So I I believe in Jesus Christ and him crucified. I know the gospel message is powerful. So I just spoke to the whole team. And not only did I talk about Jesus Christ and him crucified, because these kids are in public schools, were able to do this, but also all the lies that are being thrown at them and how they're being intellectually undermined, just like Paul would cite in Romans chapter 1. So, and if
just to jump in, Bill, and I appreciate the things you're saying, basically, number one, we can't be ashamed of the real gospel message. To the extent we try to make faith in Jesus palatable, nice, acceptable, okay, you're happy, I'm happy, we're missing the point. The preaching of the cross is a scandal, but it's a scandal that God backs with his power. The weakness of God, as Paul writes, is stronger than men. The other thing is, if we try to just get people to conform to a moral norm, in other words, well, being Christian means you live like this, and you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do that. Well, of course, that's not going to win people to the truth. And of course, it's going to seem like a turnoff, kind of a straitjacket to young people. Whereas if you can demonstrate a changed life and preach the power of a transformed life to young people, sure, they have to repent of sin and deal with issues, but that's attractive. Jesus changes people. He brings you into real connection with God. He gives purpose and hope and destiny and a reason to say no to all these carnal lusts and unclean things, as opposed to don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. So, Bill, those are very relevant points. And obviously, you're with young people. You see the power of that. Thank you, sir, for your bold witness. All right. God bless you. 866-34-TRUTH. Mario in Patterson, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. How are you doing, Dr. Michael?
I'm blessed. Yeah, thank you, Mario.
Great. The key, I think, to witnessing the youth that are, you know, getting bombarded by all kind of ways from all kind of things about the sexuality and everything, it's like, first of all, the gateway, their mind is a gateway, you know, it has to be guarded. That's the most important thing they have to learn. And not just that, it's like there's no fear of God, not even in the church. There's no fear of God because no man can destroy the body. God can destroy the body and the soul. So there's no fear of God. There has to be instilled, like, reverence, great reverence and fear of God, because he's the one that's the judge. And that, you know, basically it's like, These kids got to know that they have a soul. This is important. The afterlife, the spiritual world, is even more real than what we see now, and they got to realize that.
But Mario, when you mentioned no fear of God, a couple of years ago, I did a debate with my friend Rabbi Shmuley, and he wanted the title of the debate to be "Is Homosexuality America's Greatest Moral Crisis?" I wasn't happy with that title because my answer to that question was no, as well as his answer was no. However, we did address gay activism as the principal threat to religious freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience. But I said this, and my wife Nancy and I talked about it before the debate, and we were fully in agreement that the greatest moral crisis in America is the lack of consciousness of God. And when in our church settings, there's often very little God consciousness, very little sense of awe of his presence. We just make everything so casual. And by the way, I don't mean that we have to tiptoe around a church building or use King James English or something, but everything's just gotten so casual. You know, just kind of pull up a chair and get comfortable and enjoy your latte.
Absolutely. They become complacent. And not just that, Dr. Brown, it's like when you witness someone that's a homosexual or something like that, tendencies or whatever, you got to also condemn a fornication. You know, you got to also say that's wrong too. Not just homosexual. God's not pleased with either one. I mean, sin is sin. God's holy.
Yeah, and so right. So there's the lack of consciousness of God in our cases, believers. And look, if we're entertained by the trash of the world, if we've got rampant no-fault divorce, if some statistics argue that 80% of evangelical young people are having sex in one form or another outside of wedlock, then we're going to turn around to the homosexual community and say what you're doing is wrong. I mean, where is the moral basis And where's the conviction? Look, to the extent I'm living something out, Mario, then my life brings conviction along with my words. To the extent I'm not, I'm bringing reproach to the gospel. That's why I've often stood up publicly in different settings in front of gay and lesbian community and other settings as well to apologize for the failings of the Church of America, the heterosexual believers, to apologize for our failings. And, you know, I've been in the midst of real revival and outpouring where God's presence is so tangible that you don't dare disobey your wonderful Holy Father. All right, Mario, thank you for the call. Stay with us. A whole lot more to come your way.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I just want to clarify a couple of things very quickly before I go further. 866-348-7884. And all of you that are on hold, I'm going to get to as many calls as possible. But if I don't get to you now, I'm continuing this discussion into the second hour. So if you can stay on hold a bit, great. We'll get to you early in the next hour, but we'll get to as many calls as possible momentarily. If you've been listening since the beginning of the show, I mentioned two major bills, or in one case a lawsuit, the other case a bill that just announced yesterday. One is Congresswoman Jackie Speier is announcing efforts to, quote, protect minors from gay conversion quackery. SB 1172, which passed in California, was signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown and is now being appealed. There are cases arguing against it. Makes it illegal to give professional counseling to a minor who has unwanted same-sex attraction. Now, if that kid said, I want help to embrace my homosexual identity, great, go for it. If a kid said, you know, I'm a boy trapped in a girl's body, I'd like counseling, I'd like to get on hormone therapy and look towards sex change surgery, okay, great. If a kid says, you know, I'm attracted to the same sex and I'm uncomfortable with that, I'd like counseling, I'm 17 years old. No, illegal. Well, there's an attempt now to make this illegal on a national level. This is just being introduced today. It's called SHOCK, Stop Harming Our Kids. Also yesterday, it was announced that there is a lawsuit now against Jonah, Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing, claiming that the sexual orientation change efforts they received through Jonah were harmful and destructive. You know, I wonder how many people have gone for professional counseling because they suffered from depression only to get more depressed. People that had eating disorders and problems and went for counseling and ended up getting discouraged and eating more. I wonder how many cases there are like that. I wonder how many people struggled with something like schizophrenia and went for professional help and now feel that things are even worse afterwards. The idea that because some people received counseling efforts to help them change their sexual orientation, and I say, well, it was harmful. You know, one case, a guy was sexually abused as a kid, and then the counselor allegedly said, well, we've now traced back why you're same-sex attracted, and the person said, no, that wasn't my problem. I needed to embrace my same-sex attraction, and then I could deal with the issue of sex abuse. You know, this is just an all-out assault on the idea that change is possible. It is an all-out assault on the idea that there's anything wrong in any way with homosexual practice. It's an all-out assault on biblical values as well, and it's coming your way. A great issue is, though, that young people have been so influenced by media peers and not by Scripture that they are really on the wrong side of this issue, and just yelling at them is not going to help them. According to a Barna survey, again, 2011, 84% of Christians aged 18 to 29 admit they have no idea how the Bible applies to their field or professional interests. Wow. Can you say wow with me? April in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I was just calling to make a few comments on the young people, but it's mainly the church at large. Last night on the radio, I was listening, and it said that Christianity was like 3,000 miles wide and only an inch deep.
Yeah, American Christianity.
I never heard it mentioned like that, and I went, ooh, that's not good. We need our roots in the churches. We have to have the depth, even mm-hmm. if we only cover one square inch. We're at the area of where we are. But the main comment I had when you started talking about the young people in the church, should we talk to them? Should we find out about them? Biblically, it tells us that the young people are to listen to the older as the wiser, as the teachers. And biblically, we're to go back to the Old Testament and look at the children of Israel. Why did they go, even though they had the one true God, and start worshiping Baal, start sacrificing their children? Something goes on to where things, quote, don't work right for somebody. But it doesn't mean throw out the whole baby.
Oh, yeah, but right. April, yeah, it's absolutely not a matter of throwing out anything. In other words, it's not a matter of throwing out biblical truth or compromising or lowering our values to say, well, young people like it loose and easy, so we'll make it loose and easy. Young people want sexual freedom, so we'll give them sexual freedom. No, God forbid. But often we're missing each other. Often we're not understanding what issues and problems are. And certainly any parent, as a parent, sit down and talk to their teenager, say, okay, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. You're upset, broken relationship, what's the... Let's talk. What's going on? Or, you know, look, I was just with some kids the other day, little kids, and one was not acting respectfully, so I'm just going to demand respect. And the parents said, you know, this kid just struggles a little bit. If you can come at it from a different angle, then they'll listen to you more readily. Sometimes we just need to understand better so that we can be better parents, better leaders. That would be the point. All right, friends, stay with me on the line. I will get to your calls shortly, right after the next break. I want to reiterate a couple of things, though. The greatest issue, the greatest problem, children of Israel just mentioned, why is it that they would serve the Lord and then fall away? Because each generation must have a fresh encounter with God. That is the greatest, greatest need of all, that we preach biblical truth and that we preach it with love and compassion, but that it is preached in a real experiential way that people really encounter God. If they do, they'll give their lives for Jesus and the gospel. Friends, where I'm going in India, this is anything but a shallow, superficial Christianity. At the water baptisms we'll perform next week, God willing, the people will pledge their lives for the gospel. As they're getting baptized in water, they will say, whether by life or death, I'm going to follow Jesus. When they get baptized, help me on this trip. Hold my hands up. It's a worthy effort. We go there, we pour into people who make a radical difference, but we need your financial help at a critical time like this. Your gift of $50 to help send me to India, then next month to China, or December to India, January to China. Your gift of $50 will send you four of the very best debates I've ever done, all on four different subjects, 8 hours of total material, over $75 retail value. We'll send your way as a thank you gift. Stand with me. Your gift of any size will really be a blessing. Thanks for standing with me, holding my hands up. The number to call to stand with me on these trips, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go online to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, truth is truth. Truth always triumphs. We never back down from the truth or apologize from the truth, but let the truth be preached in the power and life of the Spirit. In David's army, there were sons of Issachar who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. What time is it today, and what should we, as God's people, be doing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I have often pointed out how so much of the church in the 1960s slept its way through a counterculture revolution, slept its way through a time of massive upheaval and cultural change to the point that by the early 1970s, society was hardly recognizable in terms of where it had been, in terms of sexual revolution, in terms of radical feminism, in terms of gay liberation, in terms of rock music, drugs, Eastern religion. Radical changes came, and for the most part, the church slept its way through it, not understanding what was happening with that young generation. What's happening with the younger generation today? What is it going to take for a turning of hearts of the younger generation to biblical standards and biblical values? What's it going to take? 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. As promised, my shout out to the fine students at Statesville Christian School. I spoke to about 100 high school students from the awesome seniors and amazing juniors and terrific sophomores and fabulous freshmen all 4 years together. Spoke to them for about an hour and a half to Q&A on issues of homosexuality. And I got invited to do this by a teacher at the school who had a current events class with about 20 students. They've read through 12 chapters so far of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, which is a 700-page book, a serious book on the subject, because they realized this was the most pressing current event issue, and they needed to address it. This particular teacher even introduced things by saying that he's hearing regularly, say, from girls that were in the school, and now they're in a college campus, and they're playing softball, they're in the girls' softball league or basketball, whatever it is, and they're under pressure because they're not lesbians. And they're ridiculed because they're not lesbians, and they're under pressure to at least experiment. He's getting calls from people like this. They realized this was an important issue, and I said, listen, let me show solidarity however I can. We set it up to do an assembly for the entire high school together. Some parents came as well. And as I said to the young people there, I was really impressed with their focus, with their attitude. You know, I didn't see kids sitting there rolling their eyes and clearly telling me, I'm not with you. I'm looking down, doing other things. And I was blessed to see that. I was a stranger to most of them, especially those that hadn't read the book. And there's just a reminder that there are plenty of young people who have biblical values, and they have biblical values because they've been raised in godly homes, or because they've encountered the Lord along with that, or because they've seen the folly of the world and they want to follow Jesus. But there are so many kids in churches all over America today that have anything but biblical values. You know, there was a Barna survey done a few years back, and well, it's been every year for, I don't know, a dozen or more years, and the stats have been fairly similar. Barna lays out six criteria and says if you hold to these, you have a biblical worldview. You might not agree with the six, but any of us that are listening and love the Lord and love the Word, we would all say, yes, yes, of course, we hold to those six things. We have a biblical worldview. Well, on average, over the dozen or so years this has been done, on average, between 9 and 11% of Americans have a biblical worldview. Hang on. Only 19% of born-again Christians had a biblical worldview. So 1 in 5. And out of young people aged, what was it, 18 to 23, it was something like 0.5% had a biblical worldview. What's it going to take to turn the hearts of the young generation to the Lord? What does the church need to do differently? What are we missing?
Cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. On the one hand, I believe we need to sit down with young people, believers and unbelievers, understand what their issues are, understand what makes them tick, understand what struggles they're having with church, and not compromise our message, but see where the real issues and problems are. The issues and problems could be they're carnal and worldly and materialistic and aren't interested in God. The issues could be they've been treated shamefully by the church. The issues could be they've had superficial discipling so that they're not allowed to ask questions and raise issues and challenge things. The issue could be they've never experienced God. The issue could be that they've got a friend that was mistreated. If we understand what the issues are, we can better address them. And to me, one of the greatest problems has been that by trying to make the gospel relevant and by watering it down for the culture, by making it light, L-I-T-E, the light version of the gospel, we have then robbed it of its power. And of course, it seems irrelevant to young people. Why would it be relevant at all when it's no longer life-changing and gets to the core of who we are and calls us to leave everything and follow Jesus? 866-348-7884. Let's interact on this subject. And if you're a young person listening, I would love to hear from you, whether you agree with me or not. I'd love to get your perspective. Nathaniel in Boston, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you. I think that we, as older Christians, we're disconnected from young people, and you know, I constantly listen and really struggle with what the issues are, and I come down to, you know, to one conclusion, and that is that the way that our church is set up does not really mentor or discover the talents that young people have, and there are not enough opportunities to really motivate their youthful desires. And I think what our young people are seeing is that the world is able to accept them for who they are with all their faults.
Mm-hmm.
The church should also be able to accept them for who they are, but provide them with a means of bettering themselves.
Yes, sir.
And I don't think there's a connection between we all have faults, but there is a way to better improve yourself and become a vessel that can do God's will. And I see a lot of religion today as religion. A lot of Christianity is really commercial Christianity. You're either a superstar for Christ or you're not. And yet, you know, my situation, I'm totally frustrated with Christianity as what most churches call it today. And I decided to go into some of the schools and find out what the young people were facing. And, you know, I was surprised. The young people are disconnected also who are Christians in the school. They have no idea of how to demonstrate Christ within their environment because they can only see Christ through the eyes of religion. But how do you reflect Christ within their school environment? They're lost, and they usually tell me they're bored with Christianity.
Yes.
They rather play games rather than really have a desire to save for the lost souls that are in the school. So,
Yeah. You know, and Nathaniel, if we just tell them differently, that's not going to do it. In other words, there's so much excitement in the media. There's so much excitement in the latest movies. You can get lost in your technology and your virtual reality games to just say, well, you should be interested in God. That's not going to do it. So number one, to reiterate what you said, yeah, the church needs to meet people where they are, struggles, warts, problems, issues, but then offer them the life-transforming gospel. I've often said that Jesus did not practice affirmational inclusion. In other words, Jesus did not take corrupt tax collectors and prostitutes and affirm them in his inclusion. Rather, he practiced transformational inclusion. He reached out to them where they were. He hung out with them, and then he changed them. So we've got to get involved in everyday life and in the nitty-gritty, dirty, difficult areas of life, and then in that context, bring a life-transforming message. Nathaniel, I'm totally with you, and you articulated things very well. Thank you, sir, for the call.
Okay. Hey, you're welcome, Dr. Brown.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Paris in Boston. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear my name said. It went out for a second.
That's okay.
Thank you for having me on your show. I just recently started listening, and I think that everything you say is a harbinger, is a hallmark. People ought to listen to it. But just briefly, I think that as far as giving the gospel in a way that will bring young people into the body of Christ in a true foundational way, the church shouldn't do anything but what was done from the beginning, and that is give the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the scripture says that, you know, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. And the way that we relate or give the gospel out should be premised on two things. Number one, the Bible says that I am the Lord, I change not. It also says Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. But then also, along with that, although society has changed, man's general depravity has not changed. So the problem and the remedy are still the same. And you say it very correctly when you say that we're supposed to be cross-culture. We're supposed to go against the grain. And when we go against the grain, that's what draws people to the life that we live. So I don't think that we should do anything different. But at the same time, yes, we should try to find out what young people are thinking. In my church, my pastor often invites the young people's Bible class up to the adult Bible class and caters to them for 2 to 3 weeks, and then allows the youth pastors to deal with, you know, issues after that. But I don't think that the gospel needs to change. I believe that we need to relate it the same way that it has been related biblically, historically, and once we do that, then people will be truly changed, and then they won't worry about, well, what if I do this and what if I do that, and, you know, they won't worry about how much grace they can go against before God is angry at
right.
them.
Right, and, you know, the key thing is the real gospel, not the contemporary American version
yes.
of what's in it
yes.
for me. And
yes.
how Jesus can make me into a bigger and better me.
Right.
You know, I was giving someone an email address to contact a colleague of mine the other day, and I said, it's so-and-so at me.com. And he said, what's me.com? Well, that's, of course, the Apple Mac address
right.
that's used,
right.
and, you know, free service there. But I said, well, it's all about me. You know, that's
right.
just,
right.
that
right.
is that
right.
is the mindset. And it is so central, so that Jesus basically comes to make me feel better about myself.
Right.
And if I don't feel
right.
good about doing this, then it's not
right.
the Lord. Whereas
right.
the gospel starts with deny yourself, take up the cross, and follow me. But
Absolutely.
Here's the issue. Jesus has to be so real and
right.
so present that we
right.
want to leave everything and follow him. Look, I was part of what was known as the Brownsville Revival. I was a leader there for 4 years in the midst of it. And I can tell you that the place was packed out with young people. We would have a
right.
Saturday night service, and you'd have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of young people all over the building, or several thousand. They could be
right.
all over the youth meeting in the middle of the week, 700-800 people. Young people on fire, passionate, witnessing in the schools and sharing
right.
the gospel without shame. Why? Because they really encountered Jesus.
Absolutely.
If we think we can just tell people, well, this is the way you do it, and you have to read the Bible, you have to pray, and this is wrong,
right.
and man shouldn't marry man, and you shouldn't, if you get prayed
oh,
down
no.
a wedlock, you shouldn't
oh,
kill
no,
the baby,
no.
and it's just that, that's not going to turn people's heart. We preach the truth. Right. We hold to biblical standards without compromise, but it must be in the power of the Spirit, and then we've got to live it out. If we're hypocrites, then we disqualify the message.
Right. Absolutely. And the last thing I want to say is that I honestly believe that it's a lot of it starts in the pulpits. Preachers need to preach the gospel of God, God's extension of grace and salvation based on our own human depravity.
Right, yeah, and again, we don't preach it in the superior looking down our nose mode, but saying, hey, Jesus changed me. That same grace is available to change you. Hey, got to run, but thank you for the call, and thanks for listening, Paris. All right, stay with us. Back to your calls on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I understand young people grow up. I understand that we had certain mindset values when we were younger that we don't hold to any longer. But I also see shifts in the attitudes of young people. And they're not going to grow out of all of those attitudes that are wrong attitudes or worldly attitudes or compromised attitudes or carnal attitudes unless they really encounter God and the Word of God becomes important to them. Otherwise, seems boring or antiquated or unimportant. 866-34-TRUTH. I started reading this quote earlier. Let me read a little bit more of it to you. It's about believers or people that are in church saying that for them, Christianity just seems unimportant. What over 80% of these kids that were interviewed said that they, in a survey by George Barna, that they did not find any relevance whatsoever in the Word of God. In terms of their own lives, going into a certain profession, going into a certain career, they didn't understand that. They saw no relevance. Friends, that is a massive problem in terms of what we're doing with discipling people, in terms of what we're doing with showing how God's Word is relevant to every area of life. I remember sitting down with our daughters when they were younger. They're now 35 and almost 34. And reading verses in Proverbs to them. And they were kind of shocked to see some of this, not in a negative way shocked, but like, wow. And I said, yeah, girls, God's Word is really relevant, very, very wise, speaks to us profoundly today. But just hammering, well, the old-fashioned religion is good enough for granddad and it's going to be good enough for me and for my grandkids. Well, the truth of the gospel is always good enough. But granddad's religion or my religion may be antiquated, may be unbiblical, may be a mixture. And it's only by getting back to the real gospel and the power and life of the Spirit lived out, incarnated in our midst, that we'll see generational change. 866-348-7884. Let's go. All right. We won't go there. Stephanie in Joppa, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello. Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine.
I was just calling because I lead a young group of college-age students through my church, and everything you've said just completely applies.
How old are you, Stephanie?
I'm 30.
Okay.
So, yeah, my husband and I lead a group, and we are seeing among this group such a moral disconnect, like their religion is one thing and their morals are something completely different. Or we're seeing that they have these morals for themselves, but they very, very steadily hold to the belief that they can impose, or not really impose, but even offer the truth to others. Like, that would be, you know, I wouldn't want someone to impose their beliefs on me.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a big reason we saw such a disconnect at the polls this year, and that so many people are pro-life, yet we have the most pro-abortion president ever. Just that, you know, I don't know how to what to make of that either, you know, how to change that, how to help that.
Right. Well, of course, there was a certain appeal that the president had to the younger generation. And then certain groups, say females in particular, there was a certain appeal. And, of course, that's important to understand. Sounds like you got a real young one there as well.
Yes.
Which is great. But let me ask you this then. You're dealing, say, with college age, yes?
Yeah, just upper high school through college and then through, like, young career, about 25, 26.
Okay. So I'm looking at a website with a survey George Barna did, Top Trends of 2011, Millennials Rethink Christianity. And he said, the Christian community is struggling to remain connected with the next generation of teens and young adults. In particular, the church is losing many young creatives like designers, artists, writers, musicians, and actors, as well as young science-minded students such as medical students, engineers, biologists, mathematicians. And then it says 84% of Christians 18 to 29-year-old admit that they have no idea how the Bible applies to their field or professional interests. So what have you and your husband been able to do that has been helpful or useful with these young people, or do you find yourself in a bit of a quandary right now?
I would say that a quandary. Just trying to figure out. I mean, I think it's one by one is definitely changing things. You know, touching one person at a time, but as a group as a whole, they just some of them don't even see how much they're dying. You know what I mean?
And
because they're so infiltrated by society.
And
living in a county, we have, like, huge drug problems and all kinds of stuff. And they don't even see it as being necessarily, it's not hurting anyone else, so it's okay. So there's just such a, I guess the biggest thing would be, like you said, every generation needs to experience God for themselves.
Yeah, and Stephanie, how many of them come from broken homes?
I would say maybe, like, half, but even the ones who are in the church have been brought up in the church. There's for some reason, I know even the book Unchristian and stuff, a lot of people, we lose them. They walk away, especially at that age group. I remember growing up in, you know, the 90s and stuff, and the early 2000s being in that age, and our biggest concern was, like, you know, we were starting to see some of these issues, like, is abortion right? Is gay, you know, homosexuality? But it was still within the church. It still felt that it was wrong, but in this age group, it's so weird. The gay marriage thing is completely accepted. Abortion has changed, like you said, but we don't impose our beliefs on anyone else or, you know, explain to others why it's wrong because that would be judging. I hear that all the time.
Yeah, like, it's extraordinary. I mean, these are strongholds and mindsets throughout the society. It's almost as if someone pushed a button and everyone just started this groupthink. You know, well, I can't judge or I can't impose my morals. And I was asked a question from the young people today that I spoke to at Statesville Christian School, the high school that I spoke with, and simple answers. If someone says, well, what's wrong with two men or two women getting married? And I said, well, let's look at the viewpoint of the kid. Is it fair to a kid to guarantee that kid will never have a mom or never have a dad, to deprive that kid of a mom and dad? Is that fair? Well, I felt it was important to raise that issue from that question. Is it fair? Okay, let's look at the ultrasound here. Is it fair that that baby is killed? In other words, somehow we've got to get into this sense of justice and connect it with real value. Say, real quick, Stephanie, do you have my book, Revolution, The Call to Holy War?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right, well, good. I wanted to make sure you had that. And maybe giving out some Jesus manifestos to your young people would be of help. If we could be of help to you, let us know. In fact, stay on the line there. Tell Andrew how many young people you have. I want to send copies of Jesus Manifesto and maybe something else just to sow into to the young people there. Because young people I'm around, they're committed, they're on fire, they're burning bright for Jesus. So, Andrew, let's find out Stephanie's contact info, how many young people she has, and we'll send a gift to help ignite some fire among them. Friends, there is hope. There is hope, but there are critical, massive needs. We've got to wake up to them, address them, and get God's help to bring about change.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, I hear it all the time. Man, you're on the wrong side of history. You're on the wrong side of history. Look, it's inevitable. Changes are coming that are so radical. Just give up now, capitulate now. Might as well do some good with your life, but give up the culture wars, give up the moral battles, because that's a lost cause. See, that's a lost cause. So all of America is going to embrace gay rights just like they embrace civil rights. See, all of America is going to embrace the redefining of marriage. And hey, if you don't believe me, just look at young people who overwhelmingly poll in favor of homosexual marriage and these other issues. And you're on the wrong side of history, man. I hear that all the time. I have only one goal, and that's to be on the right side of God, to be in right relationship with Him and doing things that honor Him. And He is the God of history. And if we're right with Him and standing for what is right in His sight, everything will turn out for the best. And when we stand before Him, He will commend us for doing what's right. The question is, how do we help this younger generation? How do we reach them effectively? We've been actually talking about that for the better part of an hour and a half, and I know that we have saved the best for last. 866-34-TRUTH. I've been reading a couple of quotes from a George Barna survey, Top Trends of 2011. One of them was Millennials Rethink Christianity. And he said, 84% of Christian 18 to 29-year-olds admit that they have no idea how the Bible applies to their field or professional interest.
Well, then we just have to teach the Bible more.
Well, all right. We always need to teach the Word of God more. We always need to get people into the Word more. However, we can do it in a way that doesn't hear and understand where people are at, where their needs are, what issues they're struggling with, so that the Bible seems irrelevant. Barna says young adults who are interested in creative or science-oriented careers often disconnect from their faith or from the church. On the creative side, this includes young musicians, artists, writers, designers, and actors. On the science-oriented side, young engineers, medical students, and science and math majors frequently struggle to see how the Bible relates to their life's calling. Barna says this is particularly urgent because nearly half of Christian teenagers aspire to careers in science. Nearly one-fifth are interested in creative professions. The Barna study showed that faith communities can become more effective in working with the next generation by linking vocation and faith. Somehow, as young people encounter God in reality, not churchianity, not just grandpa's religion, every generation has to have a fresh encounter with God. Every generation in Israel's history, think of it. The children of Israel under Joshua and the elders served God, but then the next generation fell away. Why? Because they did not have their own encounter. And when the elders and those who had been walking with God and bringing the reality of God and the truth of God to that generation, when they were no longer there, next generation had nothing to fall back on. Every generation must have a fresh encounter with God. When young people realize they can love God with heart, soul, and mind, when they realize that the scientific community with its complete naturalism and often atheism and having a naturalistic explanation for everything that rules God out, that they have swallowed lies in saying so, and that they are conspiring against truth, and that we need brilliant intellectuals to stand for truth in every area of society, and that there's a place for the release of creative gifts of music and art so that the church can really shine for Jesus and demonstrate the beauty and glory of God to a dying world. Boy, young people caught up with the glory of the Lord and who Jesus is and the extraordinary riches of the Word, they'll give their lives for the gospel. They'll give their lives for the generation. I'm an eyewitness to it. I'm an eyewitness to it for years. But we've got to understand what's going on in their lives to find out how we can communicate better and together go out and make a difference.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I believe the young generation needs real spiritual fathers and mothers. I believe they need real community. I believe they need reality. All the reality TV shows and virtual reality games. And there's a search for reality. And we come with the real gospel, not just words, but the real gospel. I believe it's still true. What a young man told me 11, 12 years ago, he said, give me a cause and I'll die for it. I believe that's still true. 866-34-TRUTH. Thomas in Raleigh, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, sir, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I'm doing good, man. I was listening, and I'm 24 years old, man. I grew up in church, and for a long time it didn't connect with me because I was, quote-unquote, churched out. You know, We are a three times a week type family, always going to church. And what hit me is when I finally got a problem that was too big for me. And I became suicidal. And God became real to me. And what I'm beginning to see with my peers, because again, I'm only 24, is that there isn't that connection to divinity yet. God isn't real yet. God is a nice guy. Jesus is a nice guy. The Holy Spirit is some guy off Ghostbusters. He's not real yet. He needs to become real. And the only way we can do that is to have people who are so connected with Jesus that the light just shines out of them.
Yeah, yeah,
We got to be salt and light. Salt causes reactions with everything. We have to be reactive. We have to convey the message. And what I found will always work with people is if it's real to you, it's real to them. Mm-hmm. And so this has
so, to so what grasp. You're saying is that even though you were raised in church, you kind of got inoculated. You've been there, done that. And then when you found yourself in real crisis, you really experienced the Lord. So the question is, what can we do so that you don't have to be suicidal and in real crisis to find the Lord? And that's your answer. If we are really full of Jesus, if we're really connected with God, if we really demonstrate an overcoming, changed life, if there's real compassion and love that comes out of us, if we can really touch God in prayer for someone else and help connect them to God, then it doesn't have to be just when they're suicidal. That reality will penetrate. Yeah, Thomas, absolutely, you're right on, and I'm glad to see that you're rightly plugged into the Lord. So go and shine some light on some lost people today, all right?
All right, thank you, sir.
All right, God bless. 866-34-TRUTH. Again, let me say something that is, I don't want to say one of my pet peeves, I'll say one of my real serious burdens and life values. If we try to water down the message to make it palatable and acceptable, we help no one. Look, we've got it all wrong when we think, oh, people are leaving the church and young people are dropping out of the churches and it's because we're not being relevant enough. And, okay, we need like a light show during the service and our youth pastor's hair's got to be more spiked. And we need better electric guitar solos during the worship times. And then, let's do like a Halloween Megadeth thing, but we'll add a little Jesus in somewhere. No. That's why people are leaving. Because we're not being authentic and because we're not really bringing Jesus. Now, I don't mean that the youth pastor has to wear a suit and tie and be stiff. And I'm not against electric guitars. I'm a drummer. I love to play drums, join in the worship team, and play to the Lord. But I give you my standard analogy. A doctor, after years of research, discovers a cure for cancer. But the way he's developed it, it's this massive pill that you have to take. Really difficult to get down. You almost choke on it, getting it down. And when you take it, it has this miserable taste, and it stays in your mouth for a full week. And on top of it costs $1 million for a pill. So the marketing people with drug companies say, look, this could be the greatest discovery in the history of medicine, but we got a problem. We need it to be kind of like gel cap, just real easy to swallow. We need it to either have no taste or a pleasant taste, and we need to get it down to $1,000 a pill. And after a year of further research, the doctor calls the marketing people back and says, I've got good news for you. We've got it down to this nice gel cap. It has a very pleasant taste. It only costs $1,000. The only problem is it doesn't cure cancer anymore. That, friends, is the contemporary American gospel. And if we had the reality of God in our midst and the reality of God on our message and lived things out authentically, sure, people would hate us and mock us on the one hand, but many would turn and they would give their lives for the gospel. 866-34-TRUTH. Anna in Raleigh, North Carolina as well. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Hello?
Hello, Anna.
Hi.
You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, hi. I'm actually a younger believer. I'm only 20, and I'm a junior at a university in Raleigh. And
okay.
I was saved about a year and a half ago, and I can completely agree with a lot of what you're saying, personally, because I grew up not knowing Christ. My mother is Catholic, and so I didn't know much about church. I didn't grow up in the church, and being in the South, it is the Bible Belt, so a lot of people know church. And so being at a university, there is a lot of religion, but there's no real personal relationship with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got saved under a leadership that is like the truth of God, and it's no compromises, no, you know, back, there's no lukewarmness, I guess to say.
Yeah.
And so I see it as a blessing to even come from, you know, knowing nothing about Jesus to come to the truth of God. And I can say that if I wasn't saved under that house, I probably would be in compromise. I would be in religion. But because I was under a house where the truth of God was spoken, like the truth of God was spoken, that I can say that, you know, I was really saved.
So Anna, in other words, if the message that you heard was watered down compromise, number one, it might not have drawn you in, but number two, you'd be in a state of mind now where you wouldn't really see the who Jesus really is and the difference he really makes, because you heard something radical that said it's going to cost you everything. You got to no lukewarmness. You got to burn for Jesus. You could throw yourself in heart and soul and say, okay, I live for this. Jesus gave his life for me. I can give my life for him. That makes sense. But some watered down religion was not going to draw you in.
Right.
Now, Anna, how has your worldview changed, your values, be it on issues like abortion or homosexual practice or other issues like that? Have you had a shift in your views since coming to faith? Or are you now in like conflict with other students over these issues?
Yes, my worldview has changed completely. As far as abortion, like only in certain circumstances is it okay. And with homosexuality, I was, you know, full for it. And on campus, there is a lot of conflict because people say, well, you know, they come up with I was born this way, or, you know, it's a woman's body, it's their right to choose and stuff like that. And even to say the believers are saying this, the Christians are saying this,
yeah,
that, well, it's okay, and, you know, God loves them anyway, and so there is a lot of conflict, and so it is hard at times to be that one, you know, to stand and say, no, the Bible says and God says, and so to be that one to say, like, to come against what the Christians are saying, who know church, who know, you know, who may have grown up in church, whereas I didn't, it is hard to say, you know, no, this is not right.
But you know what's going to happen, though, Anna? I've been following Jesus now for 41 years. I came to faith at the age of 16. I was a heroin-shooting, LSD-using hippie rock drummer and got radically saved. So it's 41 years now. You're going to see a whole lot of people who mock you today who are going to come in your dorm room or to your house crying and say, you know, I had an abortion and I mocked you for what you said, but I'm hurting and I know I did the wrong thing and can Jesus forgive me? You're going to have people come and you say, you know, I called you bigoted, but I've been with my third lesbian relationship in the last 6 months and I know this is not how God made me. Can you help me? So you just walk in love, be patient with people just like God was patient with you and with me, and hold to the truth. There's a reason that the Bible continues to be the best-selling book worldwide. Hey, Anna, want to get your address and send you a book I wrote called Revolution, The Call to Holy War. If you don't have it, I want to send it to you as a gift and add some more fuel to your fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to get straight back to the phones. It's interesting to me, friends, that I'll hit on different topics different days, and I know some phone lines are going to burn up the whole 2 hours I'm on the air. Controversial issues people want to weigh in. Others, I have stuff on my heart I want to talk about, and I don't know that I'll get to take any calls that day because there are things I want to talk about, and I'm not going to get a lot of calls. I've been impressed to see that through most of the broadcast today, our phone lines have been lit up with people who want to weigh in on the issues of young people in the church today and what the church is doing right or wrong. That's meaningful to me, and it's been multi-generational in terms of the callers. 866-34-TRUTH. Jim in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to weigh in. I'm not a young person like you. I was saved when I was young. I was 19. I'm 58 now, so it's been a few years ago, and being a young person, being saved, I was actually witness to the gospel by an older person to me who I thought was extremely old at the time. He was in his mid-30s. And I think God's smart thing, when Jesus started his ministry, he was neither young nor old. But I think his message, Dr. Brown, was so radical and so different. And I think Jesus predominantly spoke to the group of people who, I don't want to say were the have-nots, but they certainly were not the socially elite. And several of those people were suicidal, Dr. Brown. The lady with the demons, the lady that they brought that was caught in adultery, if she wasn't suicidal, she was about to find out because they were going to stone her. And I think that Jesus' message was so radical then as it would be today. And that's what drew people to Jesus. He didn't water down anything. He told it, and just like in the Sermon on the Mount, when he was speaking to the masses and explaining to them that, you know, there's more to life than the clothes on your back and the food that you eat and where you live. And that message, I think, for most of us in the watered-down Christianity of America as a whole, and I think the young people are part of this, the reason why we don't see any radicalism or revival, as the church likes to put it, is because I don't think any of us are at that need in our life, because we have plenty of clothes and plenty to eat, plenty to drink, and we don't really... the people who really flocked to Jesus, think about it, were the people who remember the young ruler that kept all the commandments and was really an outstanding person. But when it came down to need, he didn't have a need, and so he didn't need Jesus. And I think just like that person.
Jim. Just to jump in. Sorry to cut you off. You said a lot, and I appreciate it. The fact is, Leonard Ravenhill used to say it. It's common among those with a heart for revival that the reason we don't have revival is we're willing to live without it. We're not at that point of desperation for the most part, and if we give a soft invitation, we'll get a soft response. People that become Navy SEALs go through hell that most of us can't imagine to get into this elite group, which for them is something they want to do that much. We cheapen things. We're just, just ask Jesus. No, you don't have to change. No, nothing has to be different. Oh, you just ask him in. It's like, oh, casual. Casual commitment, casual Christianity. It's not going to appeal to a younger generation looking for reality. Hey, Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Paul in Newport Richey. All right, I won't even say Florida. Robert in Palm Harbor, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
I myself am 70 years old, and I was brought up in the 60s. And I consider the kids today to be very conservative. Their lifestyle is very conservative compared to the lifestyle of the 60s. But I think we should throw out the Barna studies, all of them, because I think they're based on false premises. Mm-hmm. I had read a book called The New Super Spirituality by Dr. Francis Schaeffer, which would deny just about everything Barna is saying in these recent surveys. And I think that's a very important book. But practically, I think young people today, I'm not young, but I feel that what they need is structure. And if there was an organization that has been over 100 years old almost now, it was the Navigators. They have this Colossians 2:7. You put that together with evangelism, explosion, and there you have it. What is your opinion?
Robert, I had remembered speaking to you, and I just wrote down a note, Navigators, as you were saying that. Here's what I think. Whether it's Navigators or another group, I think getting people in a serious, structured way into the Word, into a lifestyle of being a disciple and following Jesus is really, really important. That when people really have it integrated in their lives, loving Jesus, loving the Word, being disciples, making disciples, whether it's through study guides and life material from Navigators or other groups, that's the key. If we are reproducing, winning people to the Lord, seeing the effect of the gospel, seeing lives change, seeing a purpose to our own lives that we can make a difference in being people of the Word, absolutely, proper discipleship, not just in a formal way, but in a living, organic way, is a key to all of these things. Robert, thank you for the call. All right, friends, I want to make an appeal to you on a personal level. If you believe in what we're doing, and if you believe in the mission that we have to the nations throughout America, this broadcast is our daily hub. Everything in my life, my ministry, revolves around this daily broadcast, being a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. This is the hub. And from here, we do the other things we do. And one of those things is go to the nations. I'm asking you to stand with me and help me. Your gift of any size will go directly towards helping us with the upcoming expenses of my trip to India next week, working with church planters, people willing to give their lives for the gospel, and then to China with mainland pastors in January, teaching in the book of Jeremiah. Any gift would be helpful, but we want to express appreciation if you can give us, donate $50 to help with this. For your gift of $50, we'll send you four of my very best debates on four completely different subjects, from the problem of suffering to Jesus and the Jewish people to doctrinal error to gay activism. 8 hours of material, $75 value. We'll send you that as our thank you for your $50 gift. If you can give a $100 gift, we'll also add in my commentary on the book of Jeremiah and two lectures I did on Jeremiah on DVD that are not available to the general public. So do what you can. Hold my hands up as I go. Send me to India and to China and participate with us. Call right now if you can, 1-800-278-9978. By the way, the gifts we'll send you are great holiday gifts as well. 1-800-278-9978. Or go online to askdrbrown.org and click on the online bookstore. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, I have no interest in old-fashioned religion or old-fashioned tradition, but I have a great interest in the God of old and the Word of old that transformed lives then. It will transform lives today.